It's Here and Now, where we live in fear of the grammar police, listeners who are on that keyboard at the first sign of a mix-up between less and fewer, or between and among, and don't get them started on subject-verb agreement errors. Well, now there is a new cop on the beat. Actually, Ellen Jovin is more the Ann Landers of grammar, with a grammar table she's been setting up on Manhattan's Upper West Side. She's at the NPR studios in New York. Ellen, how did this start?
Well, I was sitting in my apartment this summer and feeling that it was too hot to do anything fun outside. So while I was sitting there, I thought it would be a good idea to have a table and answer grammar questions. So I ordered a table and then designed a sign and then I waited for it to get cooler. That's really about it. It just seemed like a good idea.
Yes, and others are noting it. And by the way, what does your sign say?
My sign says a lot of things. It says grammar table, but then I also drew the sign on an iPad and I also added ideas for things people could talk about. So for instance, it says comma crisis, semicolon phobia for people who are afraid of semicolons. Sometimes people who don't know what they're supposed to talk about at a grammar table, not that there's a prescription for it, but it maybe gives them ideas about what they could bring up.
Well, we love this. We were reading about it in the New York Times, which saw your table. And apparently you're running across people that we run across as well, people who are obsessed with this. People, right? They're doing their own grammar editing. Tell us about some of the people you've met.
The Upper West Side is just full of people who are just complete word nuts or word nerds. They love grammar. They love language. So there are lots of people who come up to the table who are really quite sophisticated about language. And they just are, they're happy to have, you know, someone else caring about it and maybe making some public display of that interest so we could have a little language community.
So there was one woman you met who, you know, there's the word copyright, but her Instagram account is copy wronged. And what she's been doing is tracking errors in restaurant menus, which she's finding a lot. But do people also debate you? Do they come to trip you up?
Of course they do. And usually the people who come to trip me up are male. I have
mansplaining you about grammar.
Well, it has happened. I mean, I really try not to use that word, but I get quizzed more by guys. Let's see, over the weekend, someone came up to me and said, "What's an appositive?" That's appositive. And so I started to answer and I paused and I said, "Do you really want to know the answer to this, or are you just seeing if I know?" And he said, "Just seeing if you know." So they usually admit it. I mean, some other guy came by a few weeks ago and said, "What's the difference between a restrictive relative clause and a non-restrictive relative clause?" Same thing. That makes me suspicious.
Ellen, what's an appositive?
An appositive is, for example, if I said, "My neighbor, comma, a carpenter, comma, makes a lot of noise." The carpenter is an appositive. It renames the neighbor.
Aha.
A noun phrase or a noun that is a renaming of one usually before it. And then often you have to decide if it needs commas or not. So that's a whole other thing.
And what about that other one?
Okay. So a relative clause is a group of words containing a subject and a verb. And it begins with words like that, which, who. And sometimes it limits the noun in front of it, and sometimes it just describes it without limiting. For example, "I threw away the books that were dusty."
Uh-huh.
That clause, "that were dusty," is limiting. That's a restrictive relative clause. You didn't throw away all the books. You kept the non-dusty ones. I mean, the same person would just dust all the books, but whatever. That's but "I threw away the books, comma, which were dusty." "You threw away all the books, and oh, by the way, they just happened to be dusty." That's a non-restrictive relative clause.
Okay, let's review. A restrictive relative clause restricts the description to one thing. So "I threw away the books, which or that were dusty," just the dusty books. At a comma, you've got a non-restrictive clause. "I threw away the books, comma, which were dusty." All of them were, not restricted to just some. Wow. That just was so fresh, what you just did. So, okay, people challenge you, but are there people who are genuinely, you know, sidling up to you like, "You know, I never knew this. What is this?"
I get a lot of sincere questions. People come up and sometimes they won't even say hello. I find it so odd. They just walk up. I think it's funny. I love it. But they just walk up and they'll say, "Is there an apostrophe in this word?" as though it's perfectly normal to see a grammar like there's a grammar table on every block. And so they just happen to stop at this one and ask a question. And I also get a ton of questions from people who have been perplexed by something for ages and didn't know how to look it up. They often concern commas, apostrophes, odd plural forms, maybe the past participle of an irregular verb. For instance, the verb to eat. The past tense of that is just ate. I ate. But then you have another form. I have eaten. That word eaten that comes after the form of to have is the past participle. And a lot of times people aren't sure what the correct form is to use. You hear people say, I should have went sometimes. Mm-hmm. So they're using the past tense form went rather than I should have gone. Mm-hmm. None of these are tragedies. I mean, I'm not there to make people feel bad. I'm not there to be pedantic. I really want to engage people in a conversation about language and also to learn from them because people speak, there are 800 languages in New York City. So I figure there's a lot of language stuff I can learn from them.
Yeah. And in your day job, you and your husband have a communication skills training company. You do this with, you know, governments and companies and you help people better communicate. So this is your thing, but you don't have to go out there. You don't make any money off of it. Why do you do this?
I just really, really love language. And until September, I was spending so much time posting language thoughts online. I have a whole global network of language nerds who love to talk about language with one another. And so I post things. When I come across something interesting, I post it and then we talk about it online. But too much computer time makes you weird. And I thought, I can do the same thing on the streets of New York. And that's what I did.
Wow. And when you say, you know, it's not tragic if somebody doesn't have the right grammar, but it's important. I'm reading about a young girl from El Salvador. She's working on a college application essay, you know, kind of hovering around you. And you ended up helping her write it.
Well, it's interesting because she wanted to know the difference between passive and active voice. That was her primary question. I tried to explain it to her, and then I realized, okay, we really need to have the essay because sometimes students don't report with 100% accuracy what's really being told to them about their writing weaknesses. So I wanted to see. And when she brought it, in fact, there was very little content. So I ended up talking to her about how to generate more content, what would be interesting about her life, and what she needed to understand that I didn't know about her so she could explain it in more details.
Biggest mistake people make with grammar?
I don't really think there is a biggest mistake. I think people sometimes think there is, and they end up with this little checklist of, you know, five things that decide whether you're an educated human being or not. A woman came over yesterday, and she was disturbed that so many people are combining the word none with plural verbs. So none were open. None of the stores were open. None were open. And so she thought it should always be singular. And I said, well, that's really not true. It can mean not one or not any. I bring about 8 different reference books with me to the table so that people don't just have to rely on me, a random stranger sitting there on the street. So I opened up one of the books to the entry on none. And, you know, she was reading it and she didn't look very happy that this was not actually an issue, but I don't like thinking of it that way. I don't like thinking of, oh, you don't know this thing and that marks you as uneducated. I think we all come from such different language backgrounds and experiences. So if someone pronounces often and you know, that's not how you think it should be pronounced, that doesn't mean that they don't have a million things to contribute to your intellectual life as well.
Well, and you sent her away presumably thinking, well, she insists that it has to be none of the stores was open, that no one will die if they say none of the stores were open.
That's right. There actually are no grammar police. There's no van. There are no men. No, there aren't. And I want this to be a friendly grammar table that people won't be. Sometimes people ask me questions from 10 feet away, like they're afraid I'm going to give them a quiz and then mark it with a red pen and send it to their boss or something.
A citation.
And I want it to be a friendly grammar table.
Well, we will send people your way. Ellen Jovin, look for her grammar table on the Upper West Side or Times Square around New York. Ellen, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me and Grammar Table on.
And listeners, are you ready? Because Ellen has generously offered to set up her friendly table at hereandnow.org just for a few hours today. Send your questions or comments. She will reply. The grammar helper is in. Go to hereandnow.org.